Four men, masters in their fields, coming together to pontificate on science and technology. These great men, dedicated to truth, honor, and justice in the American way, the Gizmo Sapiens.
Hey, and welcome to Gizmo Sapiens Show 98. Man, we're getting close to our centennial.
100 minus 2.
It's Chris here today, and with me, as usual, is Paul.
Greetings.
Greetings, Earthlings. Actually, we have quite a bit to go through today.
We ain't messing around.
Next week is WWDC, Apple's Worldwide Developer Conference, where we will learn all about what's new in the Macosphere, I guess is what we would say. You know, so we expect to hear, obviously, about iOS 8, macOS 10.10, probably some new hardware. My Paul says that he thinks, based upon last year's product cycle rollout, we'll see new iMacs. I think we'll see new MacBook Pros. I think the MacBook Pro is probably a much more important piece of hardware in Apple's inventory than the iMac.
What was the last year's MacBook Pro? What was Retina display?
Well, they added the 13-inch Retina display, and there has been a mid-year kicker. They went with Haswell processors in them all, and like the 13-inch got bumped from 8 gig of RAM to 16 gig of RAM. I'm just hoping for bigger, better, faster. Because I'm definitely going to buy one with 16 gig of RAM when it comes out, because I constantly run out of RAM. And I could buy one of the new Haswell ones, but I'm trying to, you know, I want the latest and greatest as long as I can get it. So, a lot of the rumors, though, have said that this year they're going to concentrate mostly on macOS 10, 10.10, which they're calling Syrah, S-Y-R-A-H. And that a lot of the, it will be some dramatic changes in the GUI, where they're, you know, unifying the iOS GUI with the macOS 10 GUI. While they will still be separate, things that can be common will become common. And one of those things will be the icons will be changed. To even be flatter and represent that more iOS type look.
Into that object store is saved at least three times, three different servers, three different hard drives.
And Paul's clicked on something and it started playing. That was really cool.
Sorry about that.
One of the other things that kind of came up, and this is actually something that came up today, is right before we were recording this.
Continuously that's looking for errors at the bit level on any one of.
And that was. Brian Blair of Rosenblatt Securities, I think that's kind of funny. You talk about stereotypes, Rosenblatt, Madoff, you know. he issued a note to investors that rumored that Apple iWatch will have a round face and a slimmer, more svelte.
Svelte, I like that word.
Yeah, svelte. Presentation than the upcoming Google Watch, the Moto 360, said there will be multiple models and that as far as a business line goes, the new iWatch will supplant the current iPod line, which is actually, you know, sagging. Obviously, if you're going to get an iPod versus an iPhone, more people are going to opt for the iPhone. You know, whereas is the iPod market is shrinking dramatically. He also says that they're building them in Asia-Pac right now in the supply chain, and that they'll be released sometime in the July-August time frame. And one of the more interesting things, he says that it's Quanta Computer, who used to make Macs and parts and pieces for Macs years and years and years ago. They made all the PowerBook 5300s and things like that. Will be manufacturing the iWatch rather than Foxconn. Which is kind of interesting. The other thing is that a lot of the functionality that the iWatch brings to market is all based upon health and fitness, but would include much of the, if not all of the functionality of the, like the iPod Touch today. So that'll be interesting. I still think wearables are a little while out. And, you know, Apple doesn't necessarily invent a marketplace. They typically wait, let everybody else flounder for a while, and they fix it and make something better. And while I see that market really needing something better, I mean, I don't think Samsung's foray into the smartwatch or wearable area is real good. Although we haven't seen the Google option, you know, it's all smoke and mirrors at this point. It's marketing material.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that could have some play and possibility, particularly if they decided to be like Google Glass and make it more open so that, you know, it would work on iOS and Android and devices and, you know, and things like that. But there's some downsides of that, too. Not having a more tightly controlled environment or ecosystem, you know, hurts the interoperability that you have. And, I mean, there's some good players out there today. I have a Pebble smartwatch, but the reality of it is it's a really neat watch. I don't use a lot of the smart function features on it. I just like the fact that it has a backlit e-paper display. So, as far as a smart device that connects to my phone, it lasts a long, long time on a charge. I usually only have to charge it once a week. What else is on here? Oh, one of the new things for iOS 8 is that everybody's talking about a split-screen multitasking mode. And there's been a lot of controversy about this. Because, like, the Surface does it today, which kind of sucks. Because on a 10-inch screen, having two apps side-by-side, there's limited functionality. Where I've had it be useful, particularly on my Surface Pro and my Surface, is, like, have Twitter open and then have my web browser open. Or, you know, the things that where one is more informational and the other one is where I get more detail of having two apps work together. But having, like, Word or even OneNote open with something else that I'm trying to get information out of to copy into OneNote, I don't see it. It just, on the small screen. Now, that being said, Microsoft just released the Surface Pro 3, which is now a 12-inch laptop,
mm-hmm.
or a 12-inch tablet, and there are rumors of Apple doing what they call the iPad Pro, which could be a much larger screen iPad, where maybe that functionality would be much better, where, you know, you get enough screen real estate where two apps side by side, you could really, you know, get the information and become more productive out of it. But with the current lineup, particularly the iPad Mini, which I really love, and the regular iPad Air and iPad 4.
I've never seen you with an iPad Mini.
Well, mine got stolen, so.
Oh.
I just don't see it being that useful a function. We talked about the MacBook Airs have recently been revamped. I think the MacBook Pros will be next, partly because we're going into the college season. You know, kids are going to need mm-hmm. laptops for college, and that's where they're going to go.
It is that time.
One of the things that I find weird, and I'm not sold that this is really happening. If it is, there's some underlying technology that Apple wants, but Apple purchasing Beats Audio, it has to be some sort of software technology. There's nothing magical about Beats Audio headphones. Everybody can argue with me all they want, but they're all made in the same plants in China that every other pair of headphones are. And I just don't see Apple acquiring a headphone company because they need headphones. I'm thinking that it could be some of their software wrapped around better bass response and better sound out of laptop speakers or more likely mobile devices using that technology. But it can't be for the hardware piece. The other thing it can't be for is for the Beats Audio music store, which only has about 111,000 subscribers. The only thing that would get them, though, is pre-negotiated agreements with all the record labels that Apple could capitalize on. But, on the other hand, that could hurt Apple because those agreements might be locked in to what Beats Audio's streaming service can provide, and there might not be a whole lot of flexibility on, you know, adding to that.
I mean, what do you think there'll be any co-branding of the...
Apple's not big on co-branding. If they buy Beats Audio, Beats Audio will...
Totally remain separate?
Well, no. I think Beats Audio will be brought in, and you'll see Beats Audio, you know...
Do you think Apple will make, like, a headphone that will be Apple-branded?
I think so. I mean, if they keep that part of the business, yeah. I don't think that's what they're in it for.
Well, I mean, part of their, you know, big drive since Jobs came out with an iPod has been music.
It has, but I'm just saying, I don't think Apple would buy them. They could buy Harman Kardon or Altec Lansing or one of the other good speaker companies who also happen to make good headphones for a fraction of the cost that they're buying Beats Audio for. They're buying Beats Audio for software. And they're going to incorporate that into Mac OS X and into iOS.
What software is it?
They have some algorithms that make like small speaker systems work much more efficiently and the sound that comes out of them much more efficiently.
So you think they'll incorporate that into the earbuds then?
I think they might. I think you'll see it in Mac OS X and iOS and it'll just be a standard.
Into the devices?
Yeah, because right now HP, and this is where potentially HP could be really hurt. They co-brand a whole bunch of their devices with Beats Audio. And part of that co-branding, particularly the laptops, is all about adding that software. And if that software, you know, is now owned by Apple, HP and Apple historically do not get along. And, you know, HP would lose that co-branding capability. And it would be a real hit to HP because Apple has a lot of innovative features and functionality that makes their product stand out. Where HP, they're kind of... HP, Dell, who's cheapest? That's how people buy those, you know? And the Beats Audio gave HP something that stood out to say, oh, you know, I can get Beats Audio sound out of this HP. And there's also a couple of other rival Android cell phone companies who co-brand with Beats Audio as well.
You ever had a pair of Beats Audio headphones?
No, because I can't bring myself to pay a couple $100 for a set of headphones, no matter how good they are.
Me either.
I wouldn't mind
having a good set of headphones for the plane.
Yeah, but I mean, that's a problem is, you know, get on a long plane flight, I put them in the seat back, I forget about them.
Yeah, that'd be bad.
You know.
But it would be nice to knock out some of that sound, get some nice noise-canceling ones.
Yeah, but...
That's a lot. It's a big investment.
But, you know, I don't like... I try to put up with it, your ear pods and earbuds, but they're not my favorite headphones. So I broke down, and for like $45, you can get three pair of really nice Sony... small cans that fold up so they fit in your laptop bag. They're not noise canceling, but they do a good job of blocking out a lot of noise. They're like $15 a pair. So I paid $45 for three pairs of those. To me, that's more of a, you know, particularly if you're traveling, you know, there's what would be worse, you put your laptop bag up and your headphones are in there and somebody smashes their suitcase on top of your bag, and I have extra protection on my laptop, but I don't on my headphones.
You'd have to have a hard case for them.
Yeah.
That's another big investment.
You know, so, I don't know, I just, that's one of those pieces of technology. I appreciate the technology and how good it can be, but I can't bring myself, particularly since most headphones, including the Beats Audios, all the components are made by the same Chinese manufacturers, and most of the hardware is assembled by the same Chinese manufacturers, and they're just co-branded, you know, whether it's Skullcandy or Beats Audio or something else, and everybody can argue with me about it, but you go look at the supply chain numbers, and everybody goes, you know, it's no wonder that, particularly on earbuds, why so many earbuds from all these different vendors look almost identical.
And sound
the same. Yeah. So, let's see what else is on here. The other thing is there's talks about Apple bringing HD audio to iOS 8, and a new version of its in-ear headphones and an updated Lightning connector. I don't know how accurate that is, but we'll find out probably sooner rather than later. One of the things that Apple should be lauded for is they were given a perfect score by the Electronic Frontier Foundation for their privacy initiatives and not sharing your personal data that you have out in the Apple cloud, which was interesting. I also, my personal belief is Microsoft, since they've released Office for iPad, they've revamped their Office 365 subscription policies, and the fact that they just put out a thing in the last couple of days about Office 365. I think there's a good chance that Office, the next Office for Mac, will be announced at WWDC.
They're due. That's due.
And it is due. We know it was coming out this year, but it'd be a good time because, again, we're going to get that college conversion rate. Kids are going in. They're going to need an Office. What better way to sell Office 365 is to do it through that. And as an Office 365 user, I like Office 365. But I like iWork, too. And, you know, but I see a need for having both most of the time. Definitely, iWork is definitely much more focused on creating a professional-looking document, and it's definitely by far the best presentation. Keynote's the best presentation program out there, but you can't beat Excel.
Yeah, it's true. That is true.
So, we'll see. I'm hoping some of my prognostications come together. Let's move on from Apple. I mean, we'll still talk about them a little bit. But,
Xbox.
Yeah, so Microsoft put out the new Xbox, or they put out a new Xbox bundle that pretty much knocked about $100 off of it. So that now you can buy the Xbox One for $399. And they did this by removing the Kinect sensor. So
now that's an add-on?
Yeah, so now it's an add-on. The other thing is so it also reduces a lot of the functionality of the Xbox because, you know, you had the, or the Xbox One, because you had the whole hand gesture
capability.
And you're, not only that, but also the speaker and microphone, well, the microphone for voice activation commands are also
in the Kinect
sensor. So I was kind of shocked they did that. A lot of game developers were a little upset because a lot of them were depending upon everybody having a Kinect, and they have games coming out that require the Kinect, and now they're going to, if this takes off to help spur Xbox One sales, they're going to, you know, have a lot of users who can't use their games.
So how much is it to have the Kinect on?
$99.
Oh, really? Oh, jeez.
But they did do some other things, too. They changed the Netflix and the Hulu Plus functionality. You no longer have to have Xbox Gold to use that. You know, we're in previous on the, not only on the Xbox One, but on the Xbox 360, if you wanted to use Netflix or Hulu Plus, excuse me, you had to have an Xbox Gold subscription on top of your Netflix or Hulu Plus subscription. And so they've gotten rid of the Xbox Gold, so moving those things out behind the paywall, from behind the paywall, has been not, pretty good. I mentioned this earlier, Microsoft released the Surface Pro 3. It's basically a 12-inch version of the Surface Pro, Surface Pro 2. It's got a better keyboard and a bigger trackpad, and it has a new pen, and they call it a pen this time instead of a stylus.
Hmm.
And it's all about writing. Like, you know, OneNote 2013 allows you to write on the screen.
Right.
And I use that functionality on my Surface Pro. But it's supposed to be much better. The new pen is supposed to be much better. But all the reviewers basically said it's a step in the right direction. But it's still not... It's still much more of a tablet than it is a PC, and the keyboard, no matter how good that keyboard and the new bigger trackpad are, they're not nearly as good, or they're only as good as the best keyboard for an iPad. The best review I read said it's only as good as the best keyboard that you can get for an iPad.
Mm-hmm.
It's still not like a laptop keyboard, even on your cheapest laptop. They said the cheapest laptop still has a better keyboard than the Surface does. And so that was kind of disappointing. The other thing that's kind of disappointing is, frankly, it's just not, to be, from the price perspective that they're playing at, and CNET did a review of it, and they pitched it against the Surface Pro 2 and the Lenovo IdeaPad Yoga 2, which are all, and the HP Spectre 13, all contemporary Windows 8 machines, and the 2013 MacBook Air, not the new one, but the old one. And the MacBook Air still crushed it on two or three of the benchmarks. And and was competitive in all the others. So it's not a powerhouse. You know, in many ways, you'd be much better off getting a good touchscreen Windows laptop if you're not a Mac user. You know.
Yeah, what's the price point on it?
Well, I mean, the low-end one with a Core i3 is like $800. But the one that you want that might actually have a little horsepower and, you know, have some longevity to it is like $2,000.
Really?
Yeah.
Jeez. It's pricey.
Yeah.
See, too much out there.
Yeah.
For that much. You got a lot of options in that range.
So, CNET put their best laptops out, and it was kind of interesting what they put on there. They had, eight categories. So, best hybrid was the Lenovo IdeaPad Yoga 2 Pro. I'm not a big Lenovo fan. In the marketplace I typically work in, because they're Chinese made, I'm not, you know, they're not a popular option. They used to make some solid hardware. I used to live by ThinkPads as my Windows machines. Not today. It's not the same ThinkPad.
It's not the quality that IBM had into it.
The best battery life was the MacBook Air 13-inch. That's kind of a no-brainer. The best touchscreen laptop was the Samsung ATIV Book 9 Plus. I'm actually impressed with the Samsung laptops. I'm not a big Samsung fan, but I like their laptops. And my next Windows machine might actually be a Samsung.
Interesting.
The best power laptop was the 13-inch... or the 15-inch Retina display MacBook Pro. I would agree with that. It's insanely powerful how good that laptop is. Best gaming laptop was the Alienware 14 gaming laptop.
Alienware still in there.
Yep. The best MacBook alternative was the Dell XPS 13, which I thought was interesting. And probably even more so, I thought was interesting, was the best Chromebook, which they're listing as a laptop in here. I own the Samsung, Series 5 Chromebook, whatever the little silver one that everybody, you know, it's kind of the de facto. I thought that was a pretty decent piece of hardware. It's actually getting a little slow. But all the Chromebooks, everybody raves about the Acers, and they're cheaper than the Samsungs.
Really?
Yeah, well, and they're not only people who use the Chromebook and use Chrome OS all the time, the guys who are hackers love them. Just said it's good, solid hardware. You don't get an SSD a lot of times, but you get a hard drive with a lot of space on it. So, you know, if you do have a lot of local files, you know, you have the place for them. And what I thought, the other one I thought was interesting, was the best inexpensive travel laptop was Asus Transformer Book T100. They said it was not a powerhouse from a performance, but, and I'll read you the quote. It says, the Asus Transformer Book T100 revives the netbook value proposition in a budget-priced 10-inch laptop that doubles as a tablet. You won't love it, but for sheer bang for the buck, it's hard to beat. And they're like $350 to $430, depending on what you get in it. That's not bad, particularly, you know, if you just need something to connect and read your email.
Yeah.
While you're traveling and stuff, you're not, you wouldn't be afraid of losing that machine. And what I call that is, I call that a airplane computer. Yeah. Leave your good computer that you need to do work on in your bag. You bring that out and you can tuck it in the seat back. If you leave it in there, you're not out too much money. If it gets broken on the plane, you're not out too much money. You know, I don't know how many times I've seen businessmen have their laptops out and have the screen open. They're trying to do work and somebody leans their seat back and the seat pinches the screen in between the seat back and the tray table, and it just crushes the screen.
You've seen that happen?
I've seen it happen 3 or 4 times.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, man. You ever seen anybody, like, reach over and want to strangle the person in front
of you? Oh, yeah. Well, it happened to a guy I work with once, and he had just been issued that laptop the day before. You know, so how do you go back in your boss, I need a new machine?
I guess if you have just the right height on it and the right angle, it's going to get caught.
Yeah. So we were speaking of HP before, and you know, HP, if they, we were talking about the whole Beats Audio thing. So HP announced an Android laptop.
Interesting.
That they call the HP SlateBook 14. And I think it's way too expensive for what you're getting. Particularly when you can buy like Android on a stick, and these sticks have the, almost the same, other than not having a screen, a keyboard, and a trackpad, but have the same specs for like $80 on Amazon. But it's a quad-core NVIDIA Tegra 4, which is actually old. You know, in Android terms, that's not a, a modern processor.
Mm-hmm.
It has a 14-inch touch display on it, 2 gig of RAM, 16 gig eMMC SSD, only 802.11 BGN Wi-Fi. It has a webcam and has Beats Audio speakers.
Mm, interesting.
It's suspected to be around $450, which I think is too much for a machine like that.
What are they targeting?
Because you can buy a ton of really good, even from HP, really good Windows 8 machines with touchscreens.
Yeah.
For $450. If it comes down to being competitive with Chromebooks, HP may have a winner. You know, because, frankly, Android has probably has more play in productivity than the Chromebook does, just because Chromebook, you're limited to using web apps, you know. Although you can use the Google, you know, some of those apps are local to the machine, like Google Docs and things like that. But, like, if I need Microsoft Office on a Chromebook, that means I'm logging into my Office 365 account and using the web versions.
So why are they doing this? What's
I think they're just trying to differentiate themselves. Yeah. But, you know, most of the Android folks thought this is kind of a middling machine, you know. I'm my new smartphone for that much that has more horsepower than that.
Yeah.
You know. So
why wouldn't I rather just run Linux on a laptop?
I agree.
I mean, I agree. Am I getting out of Android? I mean,
well, yeah, but I mean, and you think about it. Think about it. For $450, how much power you could get from a Windows touchscreen laptop. You know, you could probably get a pretty decent machine for that kind of money. You know, and if you don't want it to run Windows 8, you can put Linux on it.
Yeah.
So, I do all the show notes. I do most of my notes with customers on Microsoft OneNote 2013. Of all the Office Suite, it is probably the one app that I use all the time, and luckily it's free. It doesn't require anything. And it's on iOS and Android, and you know, it's on this Windows 8, both the RT and the regular Windows 8 devices, and on Mac. It's just a wonderful tool, and you know, I can sync all my notes up against all my other devices.
Well, its interoperability with the whole Office Suite is great. The fact that it auto saves anything you do,
yeah,
I love that that fact.
But
but to be able, to, I use a lot.
It's phenomenal. If you're not using that tool, Microsoft hit it right on the head. I mean, that Notes app in iOS is very much like it, but it's only for iOS and Mac. Whereas OneNote, I can go from my iPad to my Microsoft Surface Pro to go to my MacBook Pro, go over to my Windows desktop. I mean, I have all the same notes, all right there, and it's all sunk through my OneDrive account. So, you know, all the notes are updated all the time. Microsoft has put out a great white paper called Go Paperless with OneNote 2013. And I'll have the link in the show notes. But they put out a top five list on what you can use OneNote to do. One is organize your work and life. Store categories of information that's most important to you in a central location. This information might be an email in different programs like Word, Excel, PowerPoint, in a paper notepad or a printout or on sticky notes. You know, you could take a picture and put that in. You can save documents into your OneNote notes. It's just a great place to disaggregate all of that information. You can share your notes. Like I shared with Paul the show notes today by going in and hitting share, and it said send PDF via email. It creates a PDF, sends it to him. He now has all the notes for this. I could have also given him access to my OneNote account, and he could have pulled up the notes, and we could have collaboratively edited those notes together, which would have been really cool. You can create to-do lists inside your notes, so you know what things have to be due. You can also create project lists within OneNote, and that's and you can mark those items off as you go. So it's like in a way, it's like having a paper notepad, but it's digital. And if you have a stylus for your iPad or a Surface, or Surface Pro, you can, you know, use that to input notes directly, and it will OCR those notes, and put them in the, into your notes in more legible format than my handwriting usually is. So it's pretty cool how
it works. Say that again, the OCR function? How does that work?
If you have like on the Surface Pro, you have the tablet, the pad, or you have on a stylus for your iPad, you can actually write notes. And it'll OCR those notes. And what it can OCR, it just saves as an image in your notes, so you can go back and you know, translate your scribbles back, you know, into real things. I just cannot tell you how useful it is as a tool. Okay, enough harping on that.
Mm-hmm.
Move on to googly things. So, Google made Google Glass available to everyone in the U.S. It's still $1,500. and it's still considered in beta mode. I guess that's kind of all of Gmail. you're part of the Explorer program and not part of what's supposed to be the retail process that's supposed to start later this year. What it does mean, though, there's not a large application ecosystem. And now with the Android Watch wearable thing, I think a lot of developers are going to move towards that and not the Glass. There's just... Glass is a great idea. It is. I think it's a great idea. But I also think it's an idea that has limited application. I think, you know, heads-up displays for pilots or certain jobs that could use data like that. You know, like, look at, you know, meter maid looks at license plate and it pulls up the information, and then she can ticket, you know, create a digital ticket without having to, you know, call everything in by hand.
Mm-hmm.
That makes sense to me. But with all the legislation about what you can't do with glass, like you can't wear it in a movie theater, and it permanently attaches to your glasses, so...
You can't wear it in a movie theater for recording.
You can't wear it in certain establishments, you know, and it's even getting more and more because of privacy issues. You can't wear it into, you know, restaurants and bars and, you know, anywhere where they feel that people's privacy might be... you know, infringed.
Yeah.
And so I just think that's something that's going to die as a mainstream product and be more of a niche player product and go into various verticals that mm-hmm. that could actually really use the product.
Mm-hmm.
There's other things. Teardown.com, they broke the Google Glass down. They said there's $80 in parts. Now, that doesn't take into marketing distributions costs, but even if it's 4 or 5x that cost, say it's $500, can you imagine how much margin Google has in that product? Because Google claims that the cost of that is so much greater to build than what Teardown.com. But, you know, you're talking about going out and buying, they're using off the... shelf marketable parts you can buy, you know, at any Chinese electronics store.
Right.
So, come on, Google, just fess up. That's what they should do. They should just fess up. Yeah. Say, no, it's $1,500. It's a limited experience. This is a beta program. You got to pay to play. You know, don't go, no, that's totally off. It cost us, you know, $1,000 to build this. No. Let's see. Samsung fired their mobile design chief for the lackluster performance of the Galaxy S5. And when I say fired, it's the typical, well, we were moving him over into a new position. kind of a lateral transfer, but he has no power in the lateral transfer. So they're shaming him to death. But he still gets to draw a paycheck. One of the cool things that I found today, or in the last couple of weeks, is ToonFinder.com, or ToonFind.com. And I'll put this in the show notes as well. So, say you're watching a TV show, an episode of a TV show, and there's a song that they're playing in the mm-hmm. show, and you want to know what that song is, and maybe you want to buy that song, because you like it so much. ToonFind goes out, and they... I mean, you can look up anything. You can look up the Goldbergs, you can look up Dallas from the 80s. I mean, it's incredible what they've done. And you can go in and see all of that information, and they even have clickable links to play the song. It's pretty cool what it is. So, and then there's an iTunes link, and I think an Amazon Music link, so you know if you want to purchase it, you can purchase it. It's a really well thought out website. And I mean, it can be very informational too. You know, people argue about what song was playing in which show at which time. You can go in there and show who's the boss.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
So I, you know, the rest of this we want to talk about is TV. So in the last couple of weeks, all of the major TV companies have said, these are the shows we're keeping, these are the shows we're getting rid of. I have lots of links that I'll put in the show notes. But probably of note, what got canceled, Almost Human, we kind of knew that was coming at the when they actually aired the last episode of the season in the early spring or late winter, however you want to look at that. But probably surprisingly, they got rid of Community, which has always been a cult favorite.
Mm-hmm.
Intelligence didn't make it. Robin Williams' new show, The Crazy Ones, didn't make it. Once Upon a Time in Wonderland died. One of my favorite shows, Revolution, it aired its last episode a couple weeks or a week ago. Super Fun Night with Rebel Wilson was canceled.
Hmm.
Trophy Wife was canceled. Suburbatory. Bleh. However you say that. Like suburgatory. Suburbatory.
Suburbatory.
Or no, wait. Purgatory. Sorry.
No wonder it got canceled.
Yeah.
I can't even say it.
It was canceled after a couple seasons. That was kind of shocking. You know, usually if you make it into your third season, you don't get canceled. The Neighbors was canceled. The Michael J. Fox Show was canceled, which was a shame because it was another, what I call, a sleeper comedy hit. But the one thing that I think is kind of true about all those shows is they were all very cerebral or intellectual. And that just does not seem to be where the American populace is. I think the other thing is people don't watch TV like they used to. I don't like to watch commercials. People watch TV on DVRs. They time shift all the television. I just don't think a lot of these, the traditional ways that they're generating money and they're justifying the generation of their money is giving any of these shows a chance. A lot of them have, like Almost Human had a great, a loyal viewership, and you know, to kill that show is is a shame. But on the flip side, some of the, you know, good stuff did get renewed. Arrow got renewed.
Mm-hmm.
The 100, it hasn't even finished its first season on CW, has been renewed for a second season. The Big Bang Theory is coming back. Castle's coming back. Elementary's coming back. Marvel Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is coming back. After a phenomenal first season.
Was it good?
Oh, it was really good.
Yeah.
Last Man Standing is coming back. Goldbergs is coming back. Of all of the freshman comedies, the Goldbergs is the Last Man Standing. The Middle's coming back. Grimm is coming back. I can't figure out why Glee and 2.5 Men are coming back. I hate to say this, but Glee was a show about Cory Monteith and...
The girl.
And Michelle, what's-her-face, who is the girl. So Finn and or Leah Michelle is the actress. Finn and Rachel, that was the show, really. And without Finn, I just don't think there's much of a show. I think the plot lines are getting thinner and thinner and thinner. And, you know, they had everybody graduate high school and move to New York. Why? That's not going to happen. I hate, what was it, my, when I was a junior in high school, our English teacher, he had all these facts, and he would always tell them to everybody all the time. And one of the ones he would say, he would spout off all the time is, he goes, probably less than 1% of you will still be friends with your high school friends after you leave high school. And that's the truth. Yeah. You might be acquaintances with those folks, but you're not friends.
Right. Sure.
It changes. And so why would, you know, I know it's a fantasy because they're singing half their lines. It's like they're all Elvis Presley. Lemonade, that cool refreshing drink. but
the novelty wore off of that show.
But then, yeah, you're right. The novelty wore off. When they graduated high school, yeah, that should have been the end of the show. It just took it too far.
And 2.5 Men.
You know, it's funny sometimes.
I've really never liked it since Charlie Sheen left.
It's funny sometimes, but Anger Management, which is Charlie Sheen's current show, mm-hmm, on FX, is so much better than 2.5 Men.
Really?
I've never
watched it.
And, you know, it just, 2.5 Men, I mean, I actually like Ashton Kutcher. And I know people who like, I'm sick of the whole Alan Harper, I'm this wimp mooch, you know. I'm like, there's nothing, it's played out. It was much better when Charlie Sheen was there because there was a balance.
Yeah, that stuff's run its course. It's all, and you know, 85% of the jokes are sex-based, and it's like, come on.
Yeah.
It's just kind of cheesy.
The other one, and don't get me wrong, I like NCIS. I don't watch it. I don't watch it every night or every week. I TiVo it and I watch it like.
I don't watch shows with acronyms.
When there's no other show. Yeah. But just like CSI, there needs to be one show. I don't need CSI New Orleans and CSI New York and CSI Las Vegas. I need CSI. Same thing with NCIS. I just need NCIS. I don't need NCIS New Orleans.
NCIS, is that Navy investigation?
Yeah.
Okay.
Navy and Criminal Investigation Service.
Yeah, okay. I don't watch those.
So, there are some cool new shows coming out for the fall. The Flash, which is a spinoff of The Arrow. So, the character Barry Allen, who is in Arrow, in the second season, the current second season, he's getting his own show because most people don't realize that Barry Allen is The Flash. Gotham, which is going to be on Fox, is a show, pretty much it's, you take the Dark Knight Batman era, and it is Commissioner Gordon when he was a young detective, and what Gotham was like, and who the criminals were, and they see the whole, you're getting all the backstory for Bruce Wayne, the Joker, the Penguin,
Alfred,
yeah, all of these characters going forward, plus the people who inspired, like, the villains and the heroes to be what they were.
Really?
So it actually, to me, that looks, I'm not a big fan of the Dark Knight movies, don't get me wrong, they're not bad movies, they were entertaining to watch, but this seems more entertaining to me than those. What else is coming out?
Selfie?
Selfie by, most people know who Karen Gillan is. She was one of the longest running companions on the new Doctor Who. With Matt Smith, she's stars as and basically, this is a modern retelling of My Fair Lady. She's Eliza Doolittle, John Cho from Star Trek, who's Sulu in the new Star Trek movies. He's also in he's Harold from Harold and Kumar. he is Professor Higgins teaching the young Eliza Doolittle who has a million Twitter followers or something. You know, they've modernized the whole story, but it actually, the show has some promise. Looking at the previews, it was pretty cool. There's a show called Gallivant, which is supposed to run in the off season of Once Upon a Time. And it's about a prince who's seeking revenge against the king because he stole his one true love. And then the show that I'm probably waiting for the most, which is supposed to run in Marvel Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.'s off-season, is Marvel's Agent Carter. So Haley Atwell, who played Peggy Carter in the Captain America movies, is coming back to reprise her role after the first Captain America movie as an agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. and starting the whole S.H.I.E.L.D. organization. So that that's going to be pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
Very cool.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we covered a lot in 45 minutes, amazingly. We want to hear from you guys, so please send us an email, video mail, post a message on our blog at www.gizmosapiens.com. That's GIZMOSAPIENS.com. Or send us an email at GIZMOSAPIENS.com@gmail.com. And we'll see you on the digital flip side.
Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Gizmo Sapiens, a technology and entertainment podcast. You can reach us at our email address at gizmosapiens@gmail.com. That's GIZMOSAPIENS@gmail.com. We'd really love to hear from you, and we'll see you next week from the digital flip side.